Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is John here once again from HC3. I'm joined here today with my colleague, Dr. David Krause. And we're jumping into, well, actually, let me rephrase that. We're not jumping into anything. There's been some news that's been released recently, which concerns the report on the pathogens and the CDC being restricted on this flow of information. And so we thought it would be great to jump on, discuss this, and what could be the ramifications of this. David, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm well. Thank you, and excited to talk to you about this turn of events this evening.
It is a turn of events. Now, you sent me that article that had been released. It had come out on New York Times, and obviously we read that article, and I was kind of flabbergasted because this means that what we've talked about before, David, that we had reporting of Legionella cases and potential other pathogens, that's all stopped now. It can't be reported at the moment.
Well, it can be reported, but I don't think it's going to come back out of the organization. So the pause in communications memorandum that was issued on the 21st of January, just the day after the new administration was sworn in, that is not unusual in and of itself. When I've worked with previous government jobs, new administrations, whether it's presidents or governors, have taken those steps. Unfortunately, there's been a trend, at least within Florida and other states and here, where it's the beginning, not a short pause. And so essentially the memorandum basically says that HHS employees, of which that includes not just the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, but also NIOSH, for
okay.
Occupational health and safety.
Yeah.
All types of, CMS. So organizations that you probably have never even considered are being told they can't issue any outward facing communications. Now, a lot of people don't realize how intertwined those organizations are in the state and the county health agencies, the National Institutes for Health, all their research projects, conferences, publications, research grants.
Wow.
And most of these entities actually require, the contracts or the grants that you may receive require you to report information periodically to the granting agency, say it's the CDC, and then to receive back comments and feedback. Well, if you don't get that feedback, then everything stops and comes to a
grind. And I guess if you don't get the feedback, David, you can't take proactive or even reactive action because you don't have the data.
You don't have the data. You don't have authorization to move forward or publish the data. So it's not just going to affect publication of information coming right out of federal agencies, but also from state and universities that may be in partnerships with these organizations. So the initial publication or a memo says through February 4th. I have little expectation that that will be the end of that pause.
We were talking beforehand. You think this is going to, it's probably going to go up to February, but just before that
be an extension.
It's going to be extended.
Well, they've taken this communications pipeline and choked it down to, if there's anything you think doesn't, that absolutely has to be released, send it to the executive secretary. So this one guy is now responsible for giving the thumbs up or thumbs down to communications for organizations that exceed 80,000 people.
I mean, that is an inordinate amount of information that gets to come through one person.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. It's a black hole.
I was going to say, here's the thing though. What is the fallout from this? Because I guess now that because we don't have the reporting, we could possibly have people who contract Legionella in healthcare facilities or any other facilities, and we don't report it. And then also there could be Pseudomonas or anything else, the NTMs, and there's a potential people could die from it, and yet we don't report it. So we get no data. We can't take any action. What's the fallout?
Well, outbreaks are really tough. It's kind of like a government shutdown. And I've seen outbreaks occur during a government shutdown.
Yeah.
And it doesn't end well. But what we can probably see, we'll probably still see some like state health agencies where they have that reporting system fairly well ingrained within their state organization. where they may still recognize and initiate investigations of outbreaks for a healthcare facility where, you know, people are not highly transient, but where you're dealing with travel associated cases, where say a person lives in Arkansas and they travel to California. They contract the disease at say some hotel or someplace they were at in California. Then they go back and then they're diagnosed in Arkansas. So what happens then is normally the Arkansas, you know, the diagnosis in Arkansas would get sent to the Arkansas health department at the local county level and then to the state. Then that gets sent to the CDC, who then provides that information or uploads it to a database where people in California may start seeing a trend or the pattern. And where you have those cross-state or even worse, international travelers, those may get missed. And we may have an underreporting for a while in those situations. Then, of course, any states where there's not a robust epidemiological network and system of reporting, the CDC certainly may not be involved in those as well. So we'll see how it all turns out, but we won't know the underreporting impacts of this until we look back to it in hindsight.
We talked before and we were talking about there's going to be a massive bottleneck, right? And this bottleneck that builds up, because obviously it's coming through, as you say, it's a black hole, it's literally coming through one person. But how does this affect us in say industrial hygiene and with this? Because there's a massive bottleneck here. It's going to build up. There's no reporting, there's nothing coming out, and then all of a sudden maybe something happens. Maybe this reporting starts to come in and it's like, wait a minute, have we been behind the ball? Have we missed it? What does this mean for industrial hygienists and exposure in workplace health and safety?
You know, any of the research or health hazard evaluations that may be going on under NIOSH or any of those federal agencies that reach out and work with the state and local agencies or do investigations, those are just essentially going to be brought to a halt. Any reports that are, you know, pending, data confirmation, things like that. In my experience, when I was previously a state employee for the state of Florida, and we had the same type of edict to come through, what happened was there was a very similar type of memo that said, everything is stopped, everything is canceled. Don't go to conferences, don't give sessions, keynote speakers, any of that, cancel. Have it, you know, send it to the executive office for review. There's no name of the person who's going to review it. It's unlikely that person will be there in time for the review to occur. If it's even less likely that the person who's going to review it, if they do review it, understands the material. So if they're not steeped within that field of research, why, you know, typically that involves, you know, back and forth communications and takes time to explain the nuances and the details of the data. So in effect, we should anticipate a lot of this information to just fall off and sit there for months or longer.
Wow. Should organizations such as healthcare facilities, leisure facilities, should they be concerned about this?
Well, what could happen though, you know, many of them will see it as a respite saying, well, if nobody declares an outbreak, then we're all good. But the unfortunate thing is outbreaks that remain unattended and sources that remain unattended tend to infect more and more people, which increases the chances of people becoming severely ill in the ICU and fatalities.
Because so, in like Legionella, it's if they don't catch it early and there's no proactive approach to it, there's the chance that the Legionella is going to be colonizing in the system they don't even know is there.
Right, right. And that colonization leads to, you know, an unabated exposure to the patients, the residents, the visitors, and the workers, and therefore an increased number of people who may become ill. And, you know, the more people who become ill, the more people who will statistically become, you know, dead. So it's the numbers being there.
That's the way you got to look at that. I mean, that's what it is. It's going to create deaths. So Would you consider then, it seems to me that with this announcement that's been made, organizations should be like, oh, wait a minute, this could affect us in a dramatic way. And should they be more proactive and say, you know what, we should carry on with our testing, or we should what we're doing, or even begin it? Because it seems to me that, you know, they don't want to get caught, for want of a better expression, they don't want to get caught with their pants down.
Well, you know, broadly, water management plans and proactive steps, while they are recommended by public health officials, the CDC, ASHRAE, even AIHA, you know, Industrial Hygiene Association, they're still fairly rare. They have not been widely adopted. This may be an excellent time for organizations to recognize, okay, we are on our own. There's no public health entity that is going to knock on our door and say, hey, you might want to go check something.
Yeah.
And even more so, if you do find something and there are any cases going on, here's a time where early detection, early intervention, mitigation of those sources can really save your liability, you know, being able to intervene. And there's nobody you have to report it to. At the point, if there's no declared outbreak, no declared or linked cases of disease, if you find Legionella in your water system, in your building, that's your business. If there's a case or a, you know, or an outbreak associated with the building and you find it, now that's everybody's business at being a nationally notifiable disease. So this is a wonderful opportunity for people and organizations to look at the risk factors, not just collect samples, but to actually perform or work
risk
with
analysis.
To perform that risk assessment,
right,
to determine what they need to do in order to make sure they're managing those risks.
Now, what about, I don't want to say like maybe like an outbreak, but let's say there's a minor outbreak or there's someone has passed over and it's suspected that it's Legionella. Where does that leave it? Because obviously that can't be reported.
Well, it'll still be reported.
But it's not going to come out, so nobody's going to take any action on it.
Yeah, there's no feedback. There's no bounce back. It's still, in every state, there's a statute that requires reporting by the physicians and the laboratories of positive clinical samples indicating a Legionnaire's disease or Legionellosis. Mm-hmm. That is then reported to typically local county health department, which then compiles those and up to the state. In many instances, they may be able to spot an outbreak there if they're paying attention, but not necessarily. It depends on them basically connecting the dots. So yeah, it may be reported, but if that connecting of the dots requires people who are seeing it from a higher level to be able to see a pattern, I'm not sure. It's not clear whether that will now be, you know, whether that will fall under this memo. It certainly will require more authorization, approval, and getting it in front of the executive director or the executive secretary.
One guy. I can imagine him going into his office on a Monday and he's going 8,000 documents to go through. It's like, I'd love to be a fly in the wall then, I'll tell you.
Well, unfortunately, it's going to be, instead of the normal 200 to 300 emails he gets a day, it's probably going to be 20,000.
I can imagine. Yeah. It seems to me as well, though, David, that there has to be an issue at state level, because obviously the different states that we have, there's going to be some amount of confusion because everybody's got their own agenda. Everybody's got their own rules. And one state don't operate the same as the other state.
Well, you know, interestingly, with Legionnaire's disease, there has been an attempt to harmonize the processes since there's a reporting system up through the CDC, and the CDC actually pays for epidemic intelligence service officers, public health officers to work at and sit at state health departments and county health departments throughout the country. So like in Florida, I think the vast majority, well over 70 to 80% of the employees who worked at the state health office, their salaries were actually paid for by federal grants.
Right. Okay.
And very few were actually paid for by the state legislature of Florida.
So now you've got a greater fallout coming even from that.
Yes. We've also seen halting, based upon this memo, of research conferences. So where researchers are coming together. And some were actually in the process of, you know, in the middle of the conference.
So they can't share their data. They can't.
They're told to go home. You can't. Go home.
Literally. So you're asked to come as a speaker. You're asked to come and speak because you get asked to speak loads of times all over. Legionella has been one of the main experts in the field. You're restricted because The research that you've been doing recently that we know about has shown some phenomenal data, and we've spoke about that in some of our other discussions. But now you cannot go up and stand on that stage and actually educate and talk about it because you're restricted.
I'm not personally restricted. I can say what I want because I don't work for the federal agency. But if the conference that I'm at is federal canceled,
yeah, okay, right.
Then
I get you.
You know, there's no venue, there's no platform, there's no dais to speak from. We'll see how this plays out over the next few months. Having gone through this at the state level, typically things don't move that fast.
No.
It's easy to stop the machine. To get it rolling again is likely to take many months, if not longer. For the state of Florida, from my experience there, it never fully recovered. Communications were, from that point, limited, diminished, prohibited. And essentially, if it was important enough to speak about, it was spoken about by the governor or his executive staff. Communications, even between agencies, was stopped. So I couldn't pick up the phone and call Department of Environmental Protection, Department of Agriculture. Everything was just stopped until some nebulous date, and it was never really fully reengaged.
So when it starts again and they start to allow this information to come out, do you think it's going to make it, we could see a dramatic impact in perhaps the data that's coming through, an increase, maybe?
I don't know. I think it's unpredictable because, first of all, the data that was coming through to begin with wasn't very efficient.
No, I mean, that's one thing that you've maintained for a long time. I mean, just from the articles that we've released, from the discussions that we've had, you've always said that. You've always been a proponent of that stance.
Yeah. You know, what we've had before was far from perfect,
no,
far from effective, but it was what we had. Now that we have additional layers. I don't know if it's just going to be one layer, but additional layers of political appointees reviewing technical interim data, interim communications. I think that the amount of communications that are allowed to go through will be less, and whether they allow more reporting or conclusions of reports to be published is something to be seen in the future. But I don't think it's going to increase or improve the quality of the data or the speed with which data information, public health information is released. And now with, bird flu, other pathogens, emerging pathogens that may be on the rise, measles outbreaks.
Yeah.
We've already, had some, there's a lot of discussions going on right now about, whether those are real, whether they're believed. And we have people who are not.
Well, in terms of bird flu, there has been a few cases that we've had in the States. I mean, I think there's two or three cases at the moment.
In humans.
Yeah.
In birds, it's millions.
No, in humans. I'm talking about in humans. I mean, I know it's all over with birds, obviously, it's called bird flu, but. In humans, there has been some confirmed cases.
Well, and think how little we are coordinating and testing for that.
I know.
And the more you look, the more you find. And I think there is a reluctance to find more. There's a reluctance to look more. And now, even if you do look and there's a bottleneck of information, we shouldn't expect this to make communications about public health and steps to warn the public any better.
Is that going to affect us? Because obviously we talk about emerging pathogens all the time, which is what our interview series is actually called. But would this restriction also have a fallout in regards to emerging pathogens? Because there's a lot of data and research that's happening in
yes.
terms of new pathogens. I mean, you've always said there's possible pathogens we don't even know about that's coming to fruition. This data could restrict that in a big way and cause probably a lot more issues.
Well, it certainly leaves us being more vulnerable. So, being able to recognize and let people, populations know about risk factors and increase in cases.
Yeah.
I do fear an increase in the rumor mill that may be on the internet and whether that data or the information is reliable, is sound, you know, who do you believe? Now, many people, you know, have expressed concerns about believing what the CDC says or doesn't say. You know, their reputation has certainly gone through the ringer for quite a bit. But they are the public health agency that has the authority and the charge and the resources to actually detect and warn people about these things. Without it, we literally won't know until the hospitals are full. Whether it's just locally
Concern, because at the end of the day, anything that happens, we normally go to the CDC website to find out what are the guidelines for whether the guidelines are old or even been modernized or should be changed. The fact is most people will go to the CDC to get the information because we see that as the source.
Yes. Well, I mean, they have the statutory authority. To do this. And, you know, it is their mission. Whether they do it well or not is always an argument. But, you know, there is no one else to do this.
Yeah.
And with the recent executive order to withdraw the U.S. from the World Health Organization, which, again, has its own issues, our ability to see over the horizon, our ability to see what's coming around the corner.
You make that quite clear that you need to have that almost clairvoyant ability to see, feel the future.
Yes.
As Daryl Bem would say, to feel the future.
As we would say, scouts out. You know?
That's it. Now, get your scouts set. Yeah, send the reconnaissance out. Get the recce team out. Not that I want to politicize anything. This is not what we want to do, ladies and gentlemen. But I do have a concern as well that we mentioned this one guy that's having all of this data. Surely is that the right guy? Surely there's a concern if they don't have the background, the history, or the skills to actually interpret or discern is the word I'm looking for. Discern this data. Surely that's a big threat as well. I mean, has he got the right background?
Overwhelmed.
Exactly.
You know, being able to even go through that much information and respond to those requests that are inevitable. But even if we move past that, and political appointees do take their positions within the organization, many of them rarely find a position where they are the expert.
They're relying on other data sets and other people that are the experts.
They should be.
But they don't.
Not necessarily all the time. And they need to trust the people that they're working with. Otherwise, you know, what would be their human nature but to not release or not allow that data or information to be released. So what I hope we're not seeing is a politicization of the Health and Human Services. I hope we're really not seeing that, but with all the rhetoric that has gone on, I'm afraid that may be the case. And what's going to fill that void? What's going to fill that void? How do we access the information that was once held by the CDC? And then, of course, who becomes that trusted source? And it's going to go back to the individual states. And many of them have been decimated in their funding.
And they're not that good at sharing information either.
No.
Because of the restrictions and the fact that they don't have the funding, they don't have the money. They don't have the research to support it either.
It's going to be tough. There's a lot of broadcasters, you know, people who have opinions about what, you know, public health is doing or not doing, who have, you know, very little real data and information. And my concern is that they will be the loudest voice in the room, the loudest voice on the internet. And we were likely to see more people either panicked or ignoring things that they should be concerned about.
Yeah, and then obviously that has a dramatic effect on reality, and it may even cause the wrong decisions to be made, which may in turn affect the deaths, death toll rising, or even the cases coming in.
Yeah, exactly.
David, before we finish, what message would you leave now then to, bearing in mind what's the possibilities of what's coming up and what's coming through, what would you urge healthcare facilities and companies, organizations out there to look at now and to move forward with?
Well, certainly with healthcare facilities, for work with your infection control people, your infection control professionals, and APIC, because those organizations, while they often are working in lockstep with the epidemiologists and the Council for State and Territorial Epidemiologists, they're not so, they're not directly covered by this. They may be impacted by this communications reduction, but they're not directly. And we may need to, those organizations really may need to consider having a secondary communications pathway where they can share their data and information in an appropriately shielded manner with other hospitals within their state or in their region or across the country, so that we can we don't entirely rely upon HHS and CDC for those early warnings and compilation of data. There are many talented and qualified epidemiologists out there who do not work for the federal agencies. Mm. Just because they're not doing those calls and making those statements doesn't mean that things aren't coming down the pike. So communications are critical, and we need to just recognize what's going on there. The other aspect is be wary of either hyperbolic, hysteric claims and accusations and concerns.
Yes.
But don't ignore the things we know were still out there yesterday and are not likely to get any better on their own. So, bird flu, measles, we are still having those epidemics, those outbreaks. And if, without coordination, without intervention, they tend to get worse on their own rather than better.
So, Legionella and NTMs and.
Exactly. So,
yeah.
I think we need to stay tuned. Maybe Absolutely. We revisit this in a little bit and see where the communications are being held up and where they aren't. And, in talking with some of my sources at the CDC, there's a lot of people who are concerned with what's happening and how this is going to be played out. And, they are definitely in a wait and see mode, but they are also very clear. They do not speak to anybody in an official capacity outside of their organization.
Well, as you say, David, we will certainly have to keep an eye out. And ladies and gentlemen, you can be guaranteed that when we get the news, then we will be back on and informing you of the changes. As you can deduce, Dr. Krause has got his ears to the ground. He's speaking to the right people and he's got the information. So make sure that you keep in touch with us as well. Make sure if you've got any concerns, you reach out to Dr. Krause and the team at HC3. It's hc3fl.com. You can send a message or give a call if you've got any concerns at all. For organizations who are listening to this or people who are at the head of making these decisions, then be proactive rather than reactive and make sure that you keep that going. David, I want to thank you for being here tonight. I look forward to seeing... Well, actually, I don't look forward. I'm in a little bit trepidation to see what happens from this, but it's going to be an interesting state of play. It's like a game of chess, and we'll see what the next move is. And no doubt, we will be back on and following up with the next news release regarding here. So thank you very much. God bless, ladies and gentlemen.